Wake up with the news and information you can trust. Starting your day the right way with the Andy Griffin Show. This is News Radio 890, 92.5 KDXU.
All right. Hi, everybody. I'm Andy. Jack is here. It was 1977. There was a little movie came out called Star Wars. Maybe you heard of it. let's see what else was going on in 1977.
What are we listening to, Andrew?
Atari. I'm getting there. Just hold on. Atari 2600 came out. Let's see. There was a plane crash on the runway in L.A. It was actually a landing plane and a taking off plane crashed and killed 586 people. That's kind of sad.
Oh.
And this song made it to number one. This is a singer, Dan Hill.
Uh-huh.
Remember the song, Sometimes When We Touch?
Oh, yeah.
Sometimes When We Touch. Yeah, 1977. And Dan Hill had two hits. He was a two-hit wonder. You heard of one-hit wonder?
Yeah.
He was a two-hit wonder.
Okay.
This was one of the other ones, Can't We Try.
I don't know. Can't We Try.
Song. Yeah. But this is Sometimes When... Yeah, I'm going to turn Dan down now, though, and welcome Jack in. 1977, I was 11 years old. Jack, you were...
77, let's see, I was born in 62, so...
About 15, huh?
Yeah.
So this would have been right up your alley.
Yeah, I remember this well. Yeah.
Did you have a girlfriend at 15, Jack?
No.
There weren't really that interesting girls yet.
I was very interested.
Oh, you were interested.
They weren't interested in me.
I've been there. I know what you're talking about. Yeah. Good morning, everybody. 10 minutes after 9 o'clock. I'm Andy Griffin. He is Jack Lancaster in for his biweekly or semi-weekly appearance. Bi would be twice. Semi would be every other.
Bi-monthly.
There you go.
Yeah.
I like that.
Okay.
We're going to talk a little bit about some of the stuff that was supposed to happen that didn't.
Okay.
and clean energy as well. And, first of all, just said thanks for coming in, Jack. I don't know if you've been following the story about this little Levi Wright. Little kid. So Spencer Wright is a rodeo, pretty good rodeoer, bull rider, his wife, Callie. They had a little son named Levi.
Oh, is he the little boy that got swept away in the river?
3-year-old, yeah. So they had driven their tractor across this little stream many times on their property.
Yeah.
And no big deal. So mom's out playing with little Levi, and she goes in to check on the baby in the house. When she comes back, she says she wasn't gone more than about a minute. She comes back, he's gone. And so immediately, so of course she jumps in her little Ford Ranger, starts looking around for him and can't find him. And, then something tells her to go look by the creek. And she believes it was, there was a spiritual prompting or whatever, mm-hmm. but she goes and looks by the creek and she finds his tractor over. He had a little toy, those little kid ride on tractors. He had a little toy tractor. And, apparently little Levi, having seen his dad ride over this creek many times, thought, well, I'm going to do the same thing. And he took his little toy tractor. And unfortunately, 3-year-old and a toy tractor in a creek, you can imagine what mm-hmm. happened. So he was swept away and drowned. They found him, and it was quite some time. I think like an hour before they found him mm-hmm. downstream. They were though able to revive him so that his body started working again.
Because it was cold.
Cold water. Yeah. But unfortunately, the Wrights made the decision, but they got a second MRI and there was just no brain activity and they had made the decision to turn off the machines.
Oh,
and little
man.
Levi is, I think today is unfortunately is going to pass away. So very, very sad.
Where was
story.
This family living?
It was in Beaver County.
Oh, Beaver.
Yeah.
Okay.
Just up the road here.
Oh my goodness.
And, sad story, but it's pretty cool that Callie Wright, the mom, on social media says, I feel like Levi did what he could body-wise to prepare us for his departure. She says, yeah, we would love to have him around, but he's not going to make it. But these few days we had have prepared us to get ready for life without him. And she also posted a really touching picture online of a child greeting Jesus in the next life. And it's just very touching. But whole thing is sad. I had, unfortunately, a similar experience. My niece was killed. She crashed on her bike going down. It was just up here, the Kolob Canyon. the Kolob finger. She was riding down. She crashed, hit her head. Same kind of thing. They were able to get her, you know, she was breathing and stuff, but she was brain dead from the moment her head hit the ground. And my brother had to, you know, he and his wife had to make the decision eventually to turn off the machines. Yeah. And no parent should ever have to do that.
No.
It's awful. But it brings back to me a flood of memories, and I'm sure probably to my brother and his wife, a flood of memories of losing their daughter. And you know, there's tough things in life that we all have to go through, Jack. And, you know,
that is fun. Unfortunately, we have to deal with,
yeah. Yeah. Mm-hmm. But we need to be realistic. Until I was about maybe 30 years old-ish, never really had any tragedy in my life. I didn't really know anyone that died. I had a great, you know, a couple of great grandparents that died, but I wasn't that close to them and stuff. So I'd never really known any kind of major tragedy in my my life. So I didn't have to deal with it. And so the first couple really, really were rough.
Yeah.
You know, and I'm not saying it's gotten easy, but it's gotten easier.
Yeah.
You know, I know as we all age, and you're, like you said, you're a little bit older than me, not much, but a little bit older than me, tragedies happen, things happen, and you figure out a way to deal with them, keep marching forward.
Yeah. So no other choice, right?
Yeah. I remember a young couple in one of our old neighborhoods, you know, it was over in Washington. They had lost their son I think it was a rare disease or something. But I was like, man, you guys are so amazing that you just keep going. And the mom actually said to me, we don't really have any other choice.
Yeah.
I mean, it's not like the world stops when you lose someone you love.
Yeah.
You just got to keep going.
Yep. So it's true. The world does not stop.
It does not. All right, let's talk a little bit about...
Andy.
I know, not trying to bum you out, I'm sorry. It was kind of sad, though, that the Levi Wright's not going to make it, so...
Yeah.
Let's talk about energy a little bit.
Pure energy.
Oh, yeah, I haven't played your song in a while, have I? In 1988 is really when what they called it back then, global warming, started to become very... kind of to the forefront of people's minds. They always talk about global warming and the ice caps melting and glaciers going away and the sea levels rising. And there were some pretty dire predictions back then. Do you remember back then some of the things that were predicting, Jack?
Well, anything that was bad was blamed on global warming. Uh-huh. If you had a hurricane, if there was an extra tornado, if there was a flood, if there was a drought, if there was...
Those are opposite, though, and they were blaming them both on global warming.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah.
So the sea levels were supposed to rise.
Yeah.
A lot. Not just an inch or two, but
yeah,
like
according to Michael Mann, who was testifying in Congress in the late 80s, he said by the year 2000 that lower Manhattan would be under 6 feet of water.
Yes, islands would be no longer islands. They would be...
And the Maldives?
Maldives.
They're supposed to be underwater by now, too. Yeah, in fact, their president has gone to the UN to get money for global climate change disaster relief.
Well, that's the other thing. They changed the name somewhere along the way for global warming because that was too vulnerable.
Right. But the problem is
the climate change.
His islands are fine, and the Saudis are building lots of big hotels there. So
yeah. I saw a picture online of Plymouth Rock, which, you know, the Plymouth Rock, you know, back in the Mayflower in the 1600s. And, you know, and I saw a picture from last year of the Plymouth Rock. Guess what?
Still there.
Exactly the same water level.
Right.
Exactly.
Yeah. Well, they have tide gauges, you know, all over the world, the United States. There's a tide gauge in Battery Park, New York. The ocean is rising at about 1 centimeter. How big is a centimeter? Show me a centimeter. Yeah, about 1 centimeter.
Two point something centimeters an inch, I think.
Yeah, so about a centimeter a year. So you may have to worry about that, and I don't know. It might not even be that fast, but it's not much. And I don't even know they can measure a centimeter.
one of the things the guy was talking, there's a couple of great articles, both of them on Freeman's Perspective, perspective.com. Uh-huh. about global. One called "We Already Have Clean Energy." The other one is "A Third of a Century into Global Warming."
Uh-huh.
And it's interesting because both of these guys are scientists that wrote these stories, and both of these guys said, "I was there at the forefront when global warming and climate change really became a thing, and I was tasked with, you know, helping us guide us our world through these things that are going to happen, these cataclysms that are going to happen." He said, "But problem is, they never happened."
Right. The amount of property and lives lost to due to weather-related incidents, when you compare them to the amount of... So if you look at the total number of property damage in the past 10 years versus, let's say, in the 1960s, a lot more property damage has been done, but there's a lot more property to damage than there was back then. But if you adjust it for inflation, if you adjust it for where we are right now, the actual real cost has gone down a lot.
Yeah,
lives lost in that has gone down. And what's interesting is there's a graph, and I don't know if you could find it, but there's a graph that shows the rise in CO2 levels in the atmosphere, and that is actually happening. The CO2 levels are going up, but it's course. But if you look at the decrease in the amount of absolute poverty throughout the world, they are correlating exactly. So the more energy you have out there, the more inexpensive energy, the more you create less poverty and less starvation throughout the world. So and it's 100% correlation with the use of inexpensive energy like fossil fuels, and the amount of less poverty and less starvation and less need like that. In fact, the only places in the world where there's a problem with food and food shortages is not because of environmental concerns, it's because of political.
Right.
Wars, despots, you know, people like that are doing that, like Venezuela, where, you know, people are eating out of trash cans, and you know, Ukraine, where there's a war and things like that. That's not because of the environment. So, you know, the world has gotten a lot better. And one of the things that's happened is the world has gotten a lot greener. The total leaf coverage of the world has grown by the amount equivalent to the land area of the United States, the continental United States. That's how much more the earth has greened in the last, like, 30 years.
Wow.
Because of CO2, excessive CO2 in the atmosphere.
One of the things, by the way, Paul Rosenberg is the author of one of these articles. He talks about the fact that climate change has replaced Christianity in a lot of young people's lives. It's become a catechism. It's become a dogma. It's become a belief. And, you know, and young people are saying, this to me is more tangible and real than religion is. Mm-hmm. And yet it's not, Jack.
Yeah.
In fact, they've taken to, if there's any kind of, you mentioned it earlier, if there's any kind of disaster, a hurricane, a tornado, a thunderstorm, an earthquake, they immediately go, well, that's climate change.
Right.
That's it right there.
Right.
See, we have proof that it's happening.
Yeah.
That is such a convenient.
Yeah, it is a religion for people. Of course, you know, people have to have religion. Mm-hmm. That's not an unusual idea. If you don't have a religion, a Christianity religion or whatever, you're going to have some religion. You will have something.
Right.
So these folks that do not have a traditional religion, if you will, they will replace it with a climate change religion. Of course, they have their patron saint, you know, Saint Greta. You know,
how dare you? How dare you?
Okay. They have their blasphemy. So if you deny that man is causing climate change, then you're a climate change denier, so you're a heretic.
Yeah.
They have their martyrs, the Just Stop Oil folks in Europe, where they're gluing their hands to the paintings, they're throwing soup on paintings. I mean, that's a level of narcissism that you and I probably can't understand. So they have all of the elements of that. They have a dogma. And if you go along with the dogma, then you're in. If you go against it, you know, then of course you're a blasphemous heretic. And so, it's absolutely, it feels like a religion in a lot of cases, and it has its saints and its sinners. Yeah.
Just short of praying to the climate change gods, but maybe there's other ways of playing.
They pray to Earth. Yeah. The Earth, yeah.
Mother Earth.
The Mother Earth, yeah.
All right, so.
And humans are a scourge on the planet.
Yeah. Well, and that's one of the things he talks about in his article is humans bad, government bad, unless government is throwing a whole bunch of money at climate change, and all of a sudden government good.
Which means that
capitalism
it takes away. Yeah, capitalism's bad. So it aligns itself with the communist socialist mindset, and which means that it's inherently it takes away your freedom. Because it's going to take away your freedom to, control the temperature of your home, take away your freedom of movement in your car. It's going to take away your freedom of buying the things that you want, because everything is going to be so much more expensive. You know, it's not a secret why gasoline is so expensive now since Biden became president, because he promised to a little girl on the campaign that he was going to end fossil fuels.
Yeah.
You know, that's one of his campaign promises, is he was going to end it. So what has they done? They've stopped new gas and oil leases on federal public land on the continental shelf exploration. They've stopped renewing the leases. They've stopped
allowing
the banks that loan the money to the oil companies and the startup oil companies to get their things. Those banks are being not invested in by other companies. Through DEI, through ESG, environmental yeah. social governance,
yeah.
governance, and the Biden administration is all over that. They don't even know. They were at a congressional hearing, and I love this. I was talking about this last time I was on with Senator Kennedy, and the EPA guy. He asked him, "What is the percentage of carbon dioxide in the atmosphere?" And the entire panel of the Biden administration folks that are in charge of policy. Over carbon, over global warming, climate change, all that, they had no idea what the amount of CO2 was in their atmosphere as a percentage. A lot of them thought it was half, 50%. Okay? It's 0.004%.
I was going to say, I don't think any of us would be alive if it was that much.
No, well, yeah, we could live it if there's enough oxygen. But it would be 0.004%. Before the Industrial Revolution, it was 0.0025%. So in other words, in a stadium of 100,000 people, two of them or three of them were carbon dioxide in 1960. Today there's four or five.
In
a stadium of 100,000.
In 60 years, yeah.
Yeah.
Huh.
Okay. And what's the result? The result isn't the worth is. See, the problem is they think the earth is greening because of carbon dioxide, because, yes, it is a greenhouse gas. But water vapor is a much more powerful greenhouse gas. And the wavelength that carbon dioxide absorbs on the light waves, on the infrared, is a very narrow spectrum. There's a much broader spectrum for a lot of other gases in the atmosphere. However, and to give you an example, if you put out 0.025 or 0.03% of CO2 in the atmosphere, then it's going to, think about it, you paint your barn red, okay, you can put one coat on it. It's going to be pretty red, but it's not 100%, right? Then you put another coat on it. Do you see that much of a difference? Maybe a little bit. Put a third coat on it, put a fourth coat, put a fifth coat on it. You don't see any difference.
It's still red.
It's still red.
Yeah.
That's CO2. The more you put on it, there's a diminishing effect of global heat retention, of greenhouse effect. But the difference is then all of these plants out here. So now we're growing more food, we're feeding more people more efficiently. We're using less fertilizer. Plants are using less water because they don't have to open up their pores, their stomatas on the bottom of their leaves, to absorb the CO2. So when they absorb CO2, water comes out, and then the CO2 comes back in. So the world is becoming a better place because of the CO2 that we're releasing in the atmosphere. And if you're a greenie, if you're a commie, if you're a social, absolutely, it's a good thing.
And they don't think it's a good thing. They think
everything's going to die. They think that by the year 2020, all the glaciers will be gone from Glacier National Park. Of course, they had to take those signs down.
Yeah,
because it's 2024 and the glaciers are still there.
Still there.
Yeah.
All right. Let's go to Richard on line one. Richard, thanks for calling in to the Andy Griffin Show. Jack's with me. What's up?
Good subject, guys. I hate big government. Anyway, yeah, I was reading an article over the weekend how the EPA is just strangling the coal industry. So I guess if you don't have a windmill or a solar panel in your yard, I don't know what we're going to do at night when wind don't blow. But,
yeah,
they're driving them out of business, the coal-fired plants and coal mine period. So
yeah,
it's true.
Well, there's some good news out there. There's a nuclear power plant that had been mothballed, and they're restarting it in Wisconsin. And the governor, the left-wing governor is actually behind it because she knows that that's where her bread's buttered, by the way, and that this stuff really doesn't work.
Well, that's the answer for the future, I think. Good luck there, too.
Yeah, yeah, I know.
Thanks, Richard. We're going to talk when we come back after the break about clean energy and what that means and you know, what is involved with that. But one of the things that we're talking about, and we're going to talk about nuclear energy and fear. And in, you know, Three Mile Island, some numbers from Three Mile Island that are going to blow you away as far as the amount of radiation that people that lived near Three Mile Island got. It was so minuscule. You know, I mean, it's like 1/300th of what the average person gets every day anyway.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, I know you are a proponent of nuclear energy, mm-hmm. And also natural gas energy. So some of the numbers involved with that, as Paul Rosenberg writes, they're looking for clean energy. Clean renewable energy, it's right there in front of our faces.
Mm-hmm.
So we'll talk about that when we come back. Talking with Jack Lancaster today on the Andy Griffin Show. Thank you for tuning in, everybody. We'll check in with our weather forecast. Speaking of global warming, it's going to be hot this week. We'll be right back.
Wake up with the news and information you can trust. This is the Andy Griffin Show on News Radio 890, 92.5 KDXU, Southern Utah's News Talk Leader.
Good morning. I'm Andy Griffin. Jack Lancaster is here with me today. He's got shorts on. I don't know why. It's only like 90.
It's June.
We're just talking about weather. Okay, so today's supposed to be about 98. That's about so our average temperature on June, average high temperature on June 3rd is 91, historically here in St. George. It's supposed to be 98 today. And then by Wednesday, 105, 106, by Thursday, 107 or 108.
It's a heat wave. You know why?
St. George.
It's a La Nina year.
Oh, is it?
We've gone back to La Nina.
You got all your Ninas and Ninos all Ninas, straight there,
yeah. It's a little girl and not a little boy.
Okay. The record high temperature ever on June 3rd was in 1996. It was 107 degrees in 1996.
For today.
For today.
And today's high is supposed to be 98. And it was 107 in 96. Okay.
9 degrees hotter.
So when there's less,
yeah,
when it's hotter in the past with less CO2, how does that work?
Well, that's backwards. It shouldn't be, should it?
Right. Just asking.
According to our man-made climate emergency people.
Yeah.
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 So it doesn't make sense. And it's so funny because if you confront some of these people with the facts, they usually give you, well, that this is an anomaly. That's not, this is different. That doesn't actually, you know, you get a lot of that.
Uh-huh.
That doesn't count. That's different.
So that's a big question I always have. I said, well, if it's been hotter in the past, I mean, not kind of, but a lot hotter.
A lot, yeah.
Okay. Then, and the CO2 was a lot less. Then how does that work?
Well, it's not supposed to.
Have you ever heard of the Steinbeck novel, The Grapes of Wrath?
Grapes of Wrath, yes.
You know,
the Dust Bowl.
The Dust Bowl. When was the Dust Bowl?
No, in the US? 1930s?
1930s.
Yeah.
The 30s and the 20s were much hotter decades than they are now. Much. Hmm. Across the United States.
100 years ago, and it was hotter then.
Oh, yeah. A lot.
Well, that doesn't fit in with their narrative at all, Jack.
No, that's why they don't teach it anymore in schools. That's why the kids are freaking out.
Let's talk about clean energy for a minute. The touting of the wind turbines or windmills, if you will, and the solar. Now, we actually have kind of made fun of them, but just real quickly, the problems with those two clean energies, Jack.
Well, the wind doesn't blow all the time. Sun doesn't shine all the time. That's kind of obvious.
Mm.
And if you're in Texas and you have a solar farm, watch out for the hailstones because they're going to come by and just destroy you. And then release all of that noxious heavy metals back into your soil because they busted your solar panels into a billion pieces.
I thought this was fascinating. The nameplate, if you go up to a windmill, you know, the big old tall things with the white fan, basically, you go up to one of those down on the bottom of, there's a placard. that has said this windmill produces a whole bunch of megawatts of energy. I don't know what the number is, but this windmill produces a certain amount of megawatts of energy. But if you look into that a little bit, that rating is based on if the wind were blowing constantly at 27 miles per hour.
Mm-hmm.
Now, is there anywhere on this planet, Jack, short of maybe one of the poles or something, where the wind is blowing 27 miles per hour all the time?
I don't know. Probably not around here, though.
No. Yeah. No.
Maybe over in Hurricane.
not 27, maybe 15. But, yeah, so the megawatt rating is based on 27 miles per hour, 24/7. That doesn't happen, not anywhere. It says right on it, on the end of that, in little tiny print, it says, below this speed, power falls off exponentially. Not just a little, but it falls exponentially. Yeah. Windmills also kill a lot of birds.
Yeah.
Windmill blades are not replaceable. I mean, not renewable.
Recyclable.
Recyclable. They have to be buried, I guess.
I guess.
This little nugget, apparently, if they do produce any kind of electricity, a huge amount of that electricity is wasted in the transmission between the generators and the power distribution equipment. In other words, it never reaches the so-called grid.
Well, a lot less of it would, depending on if it's 27 miles an hour or more.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Now, solar has come way down in price, but then again, as Richard was saying when he called earlier, at nighttime, solar is worthless.
No bueno.
When it's cloudy, solar is
no bueno.
Worthless. If it snows or rains, or it gets covered in dust.
Yep.
Not good. And then, as you mentioned, Jack, what if there's a hailstorm?
Yeah, yeah.
And big pieces of hail that could dent your car.
Yeah.
What's it going to do to a glass?
See, this is the thing I don't understand. Okay, so we have to curtail our development here on the Red Rocks because of the desert tortoise.
Right.
And those of us who have lived here for a while, you know, we've had to deal with that and the development expansion of our little community, right?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. So you go down the Mojave Desert. You go on your way to Las Vegas. There used to be a coal-fired power plant just outside of Glendale. It's not there anymore.
Right.
But instead, what do you have out there in the desert?
Solar farm.
Solar farms. How many thousands of acres is that solar farm?
A lot.
And what's that doing to the desert tortoise down there?
Well, if they get under it, it's going to fry them, right?
Well, no, I don't know. It'll be in the shade.
Yeah, I don't know.
I don't know, unless that creates a lot of heat, you know, but usually it's in the shade. But don't those guys need...
Kills their habitat.
But it kills their habitat. That's what I'm saying. Yeah. And then one day those things are going to break and fall apart. Then what's it going to do? It's going to poison the soil.
And this guy surmises...
How do those guys get away with that? And we can't dig a few roads over here.
And this guy speculates, how did these giant windmills that kill thousands of birds every year, how did that get past all the environmentalists,
right.
all the animal lovers?
Yeah.
I love animals, don't get me wrong. But
I just think if you trade a power plant that takes up about 5 or 6 acres of land, if you include the parking lot, you know, and versus hundreds and thousands of acres of windmills and solar farms, that's unreliable energy. That doesn't produce it when the wind's not blowing or the sun's not shining. Why would you make that trade-off with just the land use alone?
Doesn't make sense. Let's talk about, we talked about before the break, I teased this fear and nuclear power. Nuclear power can easily provide 24/7 power to entire regions and fairly does in places like France, but and by the way, it has an excellent safety record. And that's because if something happens in a nuclear power plant, the whole world knows about it quickly.
Yeah.
You know, the one out in Japan because of the tsunami. Of course, Chernobyl, which was, by the way, Chernobyl, that was a human-caused problem.
Mm-hmm. And it was a poorly designed power plant.
Yeah. And then, what about Three Mile Island? Well, Three Mile Island exposed the people living closest to the facility to less than half the radiation that you would get if you got a chest x-ray. To be precise, the average American receives 310 millirems of radiation per year in the course of their daily lives. 310 per year. The Three Mile Island accident dosed people living within a few miles of the facility with 1.4 millirems. As opposed to 310 what you get. Mm-hmm. So that's basically one a day, 310.
Right.
And they got 1.4
right.
extra radiation. But if you read about it in school. If you, you know, think back to all when it happened and all the headlines and stuff, everybody was freaked out.
Yeah.
Radiation's going to kill
us. Well, the press has done a really good job conflating a nuclear power plant to a bomb. And they think that the thing's going to go nuclear and explode and create a nuclear blast and create radiation that'll cause cancer in everybody, forever and ever. And they've done a really good job scaring the hell out of people for that.
Paul Rosenberg calls it fear porn.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Scaring folks. Did you know after Three Mile Island, the little accident there and the very, 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 very minimal amount of radiation, the U.S. put a ban on building nuclear power plants for 33 years. Mm-hmm. None were built from the Three Mile Island accident till 2012.
Yeah, and the problem with the U.S. is that to build a nuclear power plant from the ground up is extremely expensive. It takes at least a decade.
Yeah.
And the thing is it doesn't have to be that expensive or take that long, but it's the regulations that cause it. It doubles the time and the cost. So therefore, the investors really have a hard time with it because the return isn't in a short enough span for them to.
Sure. Yeah. You invest. I'm going to invest in a nuclear power plant. When will I see my returns? Oh, well, the plant might be done in 10 years or so. And then you might start turning a profit in 15 years or 20.
Yeah. Yeah.
Are you Based willing to wait that long?
Yeah.
Well, most of us aren't.
Right. Well, so therefore you have to get different sources of funding for that, like government types.
Yeah. So nuclear energy is something that is so scary to everybody because of that word nuclear. It's funny because they changed global warming to climate change.
Mm-hmm.
I wonder if there was a way for them to change nuclear power to some other name that wouldn't scare people so much.
Atomic?
Well, that's kind of scary. Atomic bomb. Yeah, that's
atomic
worse.
Power.
Yeah, maybe.
I remember growing up. The Atomic Energy Commission and that was, it was not necessarily a bad thing. And again, this is my early childhood memories in the 1960s. And I lived in Las Vegas and, they're test firing those nukes up there a lot. And of course, up here, the downwinders were getting their dosage. It wasn't good either.
Yeah. I think my thyroid screwed up because of that. But anyway. Yeah.
Again, a bomb and a power plant are two completely different things. They don't even use the same. I mean, they still use a uranium-235, but they don't use it in nearly the concentrations that they need. The byproducts aren't there that you get from the bomb. The stuff is contained. It's in ceramic rods, and they store it on site. So it's not, there is a storage problem with conventional nuclear power. Because the stuff stays radioactive for about 100,000, 30,000 years, something like that. It's a long time. They do have a facility that they've dug out of a Yucca Mountain over in central Nevada, over by the test site where you can store that. Of course, the state of Nevada doesn't want it. But the government went ahead and built it, even though they're not using it, apparently. Apparently. Quote marks here.
Yeah, apparently. I think one of the problems is the transporting of it. They don't want
they worry
a
about
train
it.
Coming through with that stuff
yeah,
on
Yeah, they
it,
worry about
there.
It getting derailed. And, if you live in that town in Pennsylvania, East Palestine, you may have a legitimate gripe on that.
Good point.
But, if you're going to do this, you have to do it and you have to think it through. I mean, the French have been doing it for decades.
Mm-hmm.
They figured a lot of stuff out, and there's no reason we can't. And the next generation power plants are a lot. There's new designs, and there's also the whole thorium thing that's coming along that people are experimenting with, and it's a design that we've had around for years. And if we were able to get that and get that online, we could solve our energy problems. The only thing if you're talking about electricity that's being generated. That would solve that problem. Then the other problem, if you're worried about the global warming CO2 thing, then you got to worry about how you're going to push your cars around, how you're going to fly your jets, how you're going to move your stuff across the oceans and the ships, that kind of stuff. I mean, if you've solved the electricity problem, now you got to worry about where you're going to go.
And if you're going to have electric cars running off of the solved electrical problem, well. What about then the lithium and all that stuff?
I just think we just need to go, if we're worried about it that much, just go to natural gas cars.
And that brings us to a commercial break and what we're going to talk about when we come back. The other clean energy. I got some numbers here on the amount of, what's the word, British, the amount of basically dirt or particulate matter produced with the different kinds of energy. Coming in second place, but not by much, is natural gas. We'll talk about that when we come back.
All the latest news, weather, traffic, and sports, just like you like them. You're waking up with the Andy Griffin Show on News Radio 890, 92.5 KDXU, Southern Utah's news talk leader.
It's 9:51. Thanks for listening today. You're always welcome to call at 435-673-5890, or you can text me at 467-5842. Both of those, again, 435 area code, 467-5842. If you'd like to text in to the program, we are talking energy today. And the consensus is, even among conservatives, that coal energy is probably not real good because of the pollution, the particulates. When producing a billion BTUs, that's British thermal units, measurement of heat, a coal plant out of the million BTUs produces 2,744 particulates in the air. That's the black stuff you see coming out of the smokestacks and into the air. Oil, 84 particulates. It's not very high, but the two best are nuclear, which produces zero particulates.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
And natural gas is very, very low. Only 7 for every million BTUs. Natural gas produces 7 particulates in the air. 7.
Well, when I had my natural gas Honda Civic, this is a funny thing I always do. You know how you go to tailpipe to your car?
Yeah.
And then when it's cold, don't do it when it's hot.
Don't do it when it's hot.
You go kind of swipe your finger around the inside of the tailpipe and your finger's black. You ever do that?
I don't think I've done that, but you would know that, right?
Yeah. Okay. Well, I would do it on the tailpipe of my natural gas car, clean as a whistle.
Nothing.
Wow. Yeah. Yeah.
Well, I mean, just do the math on that. 7 versus 2,704, or for oil, 7 versus 84, that's 12 times more particulates for oil. And let's see, 7 into 2,000, well, that's a whole bunch, like 4,000 or something per.
Yeah.
4,000 times dirtier coal is than natural gas. So tell me why we should switch to natural gas for all our fuel, all our power needs, and why haven't we?
Okay, why we haven't, I don't know. Probably because
there's got to be a reason.
Well, okay, I'll give you a reason.
Okay,
Coal is a rock basically, so it's easy to transport from the mine to the end user.
Okay,
you put it on a train, you put it on a boat, whatever, and you have a lot of it, and it's
kind of same with oil.
And oil, yeah, you just put it in a pipeline or you put it in a big tank. You don't have to have any special consideration for it. You just, you know, and away you go.
Mm-hmm.
Natural gas is a gas. So in order to move it efficiently, you need to have either a pipeline or you need to put it in a tanker that's got pressurized vessels, and that's expensive. And you got to keep it cold or it pressurize it anyway. And so it's a little more expensive to go from the gas field to the end user. I don't know if you recall, 25 years ago or so, they built a natural gas line just right through our county from Wyoming to California.
Yeah.
Because
is there fear involved, like with nuclear? Are people afraid of natural gas a little bit? I had a friend who was making natural gas cars. He had turned his career into putting natural gas tanks on the back of a car and converting cars to natural gas. And he said that one of the first questions he always got asked was, well, if someone runs into me, is it going to blow up?
Yeah, that was the thing. Well, because that pressure is, what was it? When I would pressure my tank, it would be empty at about 2,000 pounds, and it was full at 5,500 pounds. And you think about that, that's a lot. That's a lot of pressure.
Yeah.
But I could only have enough fuel in that 5,000 pounds to drive my car city miles, about 150 miles.
And that's a real problem with electric vehicles, is range.
Yeah, so it was a range thing. I drove it to Salt Lake 2 or 3 times, and there's a filling station in Scipio, and I could top off there. And on the freeway, I would get about 200 miles to the tank. So as long as I mapped out where I was going, I was doing pretty good.
Yeah.
And it was fun, you know, that adventure of getting it to where I needed to go.
like Kramer on a Seinfeld episode, see how far we can go.
See how far I can get on that empty. So the problem with natural gas is just that. So, you know, oil is just so much easier to, but again, the particular thing, you know, I would go to natural gas. The Greens don't like it. The global warming types don't like it because it still emits CO2 because it's a hydrocarbon, but it's cleaner and there's no particulates to speak of. And, you know, our skies are going to be cleaner and all we're doing is we're spewing out of the tailpipe, basically plant food. And water,
yeah,
and vapor, food. Water vapor. That's it.
So it's incredibly
clean.
Smart. And
it's
clean.
Very smart.
And yet, electric vehicles have gained momentum. Of course, we have combustion engines. We have diesel engines. We don't have, I mean, we do, but not very many natural gas engines out there, Jeff.
No, and I think Honda quit making the thing. I think Utah quit doing it. I think they had a thing. I guess it was a fad. I don't know. I don't know why we'd start stuff and stop stuff that works. You know,
it's 12 times cleaner than a gas car.
Yeah.
12 times cleaner.
And, you know, my little Honda, you know, for driving around town, it was fine. Mm-hmm. You know, I had to fill up maybe once every 5 days, depending on how I was driving, you know, and it did fine, you know.
So shouldn't we be, in a way, meaning the United States, the government, all of us, be investing and excited about natural gas cars way more than electric cars, which you have to mine all this ion, and the engines are super heavy, and they're ruining our roads, and they have limited range. Shouldn't we be throwing all our technology into making natural gas cars more?
The technology's there. It's the infrastructure that's not.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But I mean, you know, they're right now trying so hard to make the range of electric cars longer.
And I think one day, you know, we'll come up with a superconductor material that'll make electric cars really nice, and that'll be the way to go. But when that day happens, then we'll all go there, and you won't need government subsidies to make us do it.
Because capitalism will do its thing.
Because capitalism will do its thing.
Yeah.
You know? And that's fine.
And that's why... You know, that's why wind and solar are not the answer, because if they really worked that well, guess what?
You wouldn't need to...
Everybody'd be buying them. Capitalism would do its thing.
Right, right.
And it's not.
Right.
Because it doesn't.
And, you know, they're trying to get, you know, they're right now, I think New York State or New York City's passed a law that you can't have any gas appliances in your apartments anymore. They were going after a pizza guy.
Yeah.
Did you hear about that?
Yeah.
Going after a pizza guy because he wanted to, because he's cooking pizza in his oven for like the last 50 years with wood?
Yeah.
What? This talk about your hair. This is the religious side of it.
Mm-hmm.
Okay? Like that one pizza oven's going to make a hill's worth of difference. You know?
Yeah.
And in the meantime, you got people in third world countries that are dying of lung cancer and lung related diseases because they're heating their homes with dung.
Yeah.
You know?
True. Yeah.
And we're not, you know, the first world isn't giving these countries or these people that live in these countries loans to build gas or coal power plants so that they can electrify themselves and everybody can quit. And that's what's making people live longer. They're getting electricity to heat their homes or to cook with instead of with fire, and they're living longer. Imagine that.
Got a minute left. I just want to maybe throw this out there for folks. Listen, if you hear nuclear energy, if you hear natural gas energy, don't be afraid of those things. Those things are clean energy. Those things are not going to hurt you.
I think the biggest thing, the reason I get into this whole global warming thing is I've got three daughters, and I don't want them to be afraid for the future.
Yeah.
A lot of these kids are saying, well, I'm not having babies, and I'm not having kids. The Earth has too many people. You know, the Earth needs, you know, half as many people as it has right now. Well, guess what? What's going to be, how are you going to achieve that goal? I'd like to know that plan.
Zero population.
Huh? Uh-huh.
Yeah,
that ain't gonna work. That tells me where your interests and where your values really lie.
Ask China about only being allowed to have one kid, how that worked out for them.
Yeah.
Not so good.
Yeah.
Jack, thanks for coming on today.
Pleasure, as always.
Pleasure, my friend. 9:59 on KDXU. Back tomorrow, Marianne Hamilton, our senior fitness guru, is on the program tomorrow to help you figure out how you can live longer, maybe even to 100. Hmm. I'll talk to you then.